afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Tuesday, March 8th. Our first item of business is to call the roll. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr present. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason present. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson.
Olson present.
Olson present. Representative Richardson.
Richardson present.
Richardson present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson present.
Torkelson present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes of March 3rd. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was a simple minutes and it looked good to me, so I move the approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. Well, members, we have a busy hearing ahead of us. Our theme today relates to bus transit, and we're going to be hearing bills, three bills related to arterial bus rapid transit. I was very pleased with the progress we made on this mode last year. Very strong bipartisan support for arterial BRT, a very effective, reliable, economical form of transit. And so we'll be hearing about those three lines. And then as we discussed at our last meeting or a week ago, we're going to go a little bit more in depth on electrification of the bus transit system. So roughly speaking, we'll be splitting the hearing in half with our bills at the beginning and then our discussion of bus electrification for the second half, although we may get through the bills a little sooner. So our first item on the agenda is House File 3623, Representative Hansen. That is funding for the G line, and that is a line that will go from Little Canada to West St. Paul. And I will be moving this bill to be laid over for possible inclusion in a possible omnibus bill for transportation. And Representative Hansen, were you able, I know you were doing some of the preliminaries for your committee. Are you with us?
I am here, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the Transportation Committee, Chairman Hansen. Please tell us about the G line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Transportation Committee. Pleased to be here. The G line, I think G stands for great, great line for you to support. And it helps out the South Metro. It moves through St. Paul from Little Canada, Roseville, St. Paul, and into West St. Paul. And many of you have been on Robert Street and are familiar with that. And the G line would provide for bus rapid transit along Robert Street. That project is including, but not limited to, pre-design, design, engineering, environmental analysis, mitigation, rights-of-way acquisition, construction, and acquisition of rolling stock. So it's a one-time appropriation available till June 30th, 2026. And I believe we have some transportation advocates here to transit advocates to testify for it.
Okay, I know that I have Ms. Sabatka on the list from Move Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Sabatka. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Suzanne Sabatka. I'm the Policy and Research Director at Move Minnesota. I prepared testimony in support of all three lines, so I will ask if you'd like me to hold my comments until we've heard all three bills, or if you'd like me to speak about the G line specifically now.
Well, I think that why don't we have you sort of take us home with a little piece with all in support of all three lines at the end. That sounds like it would be good. Chair Hansen, I know you have some folks from your community that are lined up to testify as well. So if you wanted to bring them forward, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, they are watching, but they are not, I believe, signed up. So unless okay. they have been given given the link, I think they are watching supportively. I have a number of the city councilors in West St. Paul. Let me just say, you know, members are familiar with the West St. Paul reconstruction with Robert Street. And this finally kind of closes the deal there by providing bus rapid transit. We have a lot of apartments, a lot of housing going up in West St. Paul, and providing transit is really critical. And having this link, you know, as I've been meeting with both the school, the elementary school and the high school, but also Metro State, today I met with disability advocates, and being able to move through the community with transit is really critical. It provides that link for those folks who don't have cars. It is the way that they can get to downtown and move through downtown, get to school. It's just part of this piece that has been missing for so long. And hooking into the transit system that is being built in our metro area is critical. So I hope that you can consider it. I know Ms. Sabatka will, again, remember that the G line is great of all the three. It's the greatest one. So remember that when you're looking for support.
Well, thank you, Chair Hansen, and thank you for, I think, really articulating very clearly why transit is so necessary, and then particularly this form of transit, which has been very resilient even during the pandemic. While ridership has been down generally, arterial bus rapid transit and our local routes have held their own, and I think that's because they go places where people want to and need to go. These lines are reliable. You know, there's a every 10 to 15 minutes, you can count on a modern bus stopping with, you pay your fare ahead of time. It's low platform boarding. In some cases they have signal prioritization. So you can get to where you're going very quickly and comfortably. There are also great investments as we try to address the climate crisis that we're in as well. So are there any member questions of Representative Hansen? I do not see any. So Representative Hansen, thank you. And again, members, I was very pleased with the progress that we've made over the last couple of years on this arterial bus rapid transit mode. We had the B and the D lines in the bonding bill in fall of 2020. And then in last year's omnibus bill, we had funding for the E and most of the F line. We'll hear a little about the F line later today. In the 2021 omnibus bill. And again, with strong bipartisan support for all of these. So I think this is a mode we can all agree on is effective and important as we move forward. And there's not too many regions in the country that are doing it this way. And I hope we can become the arterial bus rapid transit capital of North America. So the G line will go a long way towards that goal. And thank you very much, Representative Hansen. This bill is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The next bill on the agenda, members, is House File 3767, the H line from Representative Jordan. And this is a arterial bus rapid transit line that will go from downtown Minneapolis to the east side of St. Paul. Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, did my amendment get posted?
Let's see. Mr. Howe, there is an A1 amendment, I believe. And so if you want to explain the A1 amendment, and then we'll incorporate that into the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is a more accurate estimation of the cost of the H line from the amount that I put in. $80,000 is what the Met Council and Metro Transit anticipate the cost of fully funding the H line will be with federal funds. And so that's the amendment.
Okay, is there discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, then all those—
Mr. Chair?
Representative Petersburg.
I think she said 80,000. I think she meant 80 million, is that correct?
Yes, I did, thank you.
Yeah, Representative Petersburg, you have an eye for detail, and we appreciate that. So it is clearly on the record now. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Okay, any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails, and we have House File 3767 as amended before us. Representative Jordan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing me and helping me out when I misspeak. House File 3767 funds the next expansion in arterial bus rapid transit, the H line. The proposed H line would extend from downtown Minneapolis through the U of M, across St. Paul, and end at the Sunray Shopping Center by Como and Maryland Avenues. This line would connect students to their colleges and universities, workers with over 170,000 jobs, customers with businesses, families with parks and libraries, congregants with their places of worship, and so much more. The existing Route 3 already has some of the highest ridership in the Metro Transit system, and with a modern, safe, and convenient bus route, use will only grow. I would be happy to talk about ABRT all day, but I know time is limited. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over testimony to Elliot Altbaum from Isaiah. And afterwards, we'd be happy to answer questions. There's also folks from Metro Transit and the Met Council to answer technical questions that folks may have.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And just FYI for members and members of the public, there are maps of all of these lines that we're discussing today in your packets, and they're also posted online. So folks want to get a sense of where these lines are, please consult those packets. Okay, well, welcome to the committee, Mr. Altbaum. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Elliot Altbaum. I'm an organizer at Isaiah for the Young Adult Coalition. And I represent and organize young people, both in colleges and renters in our 20s and 30s across the Twin Cities. And before I talk about how important this has been to so many of the people that I organize with, I just want to say I grew up taking the bus every morning to daycare. My father worked at the University of Minnesota, and we took the bus every morning. He would take me for daycare every morning. And so I know how important it is to have reliable transit for families to get to work and to get me to childcare. And I know that's true for so many families across our region. I've also been out talking with students at the University of Minnesota and people all across the line. And one of the things that has become very clear is how much people and students rely on this line. When I'm out talking with people, I hear people using it 3, 4, 5 times a day to get back and forth from class, and how important it is to have something that is reliable and timely for students getting to class. The other thing that has come up over and over again, and when talking with students, is how much they value having a whole system. So that this is not just about having the value of a reliable and quick line, but that it is more valuable in a whole system. And so excited to see the proposals for all of the other lines together. As Isaiah, we also represent mosques and Muslim community across the state. And excited to see and hear from both students who go to the University of Minnesota and attend the Al-Hassan Mosque on Como Avenue, and as like a constant where students go to for prayer. And so this would be a line that connects students and families people for worship. And then the last thing I'll say is how much this has been a possible way for us to address the climate crisis. And I know while we're seeing fuel prices might be rising in the current moment, how important it is to have reliable and affordable transit options that can respond to everyone's needs in this moment. So I am very excited by the potential for this to be included in a wider set of lines across the Twin Cities for students and families.
Thank you, Mr. Altbaum. And Mr. Altbaum, I appreciate your work, engaging with so many different people who live along these lines, faith communities, students, others. I think you make a very strong case. So appreciate your presence here. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Altbaum? Okay. Is there additional testimony? Representative Jordan, I know the city of Minneapolis and others have weighed in, and I think we have that testimony in packets. Do you have any kind of concluding comments that you would like to share?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for your time today and your consideration of the H line. One detail that I didn't mention that I think is important to think about with the H line is it's actually an east-west route. We hear a lot about more north-south routes, but this is one that will actually connect many of the other lines that we're funding. So it's important for connectivity across the entire region. So happy to hear more from folks and thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Representative Jordan. You're kind of like the arterial bus rapid transit leader now. This is your second bill, and we're going to get to your first, the one that you helped start in just a minute, but I really appreciate your work on this and how you've been able to coalesce a lot of energy and support for arterial BRT. Thank you so much.
That's high praise. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So members, we will lay over House File 3767 as amended for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation finance and policy bill. So finally, in terms of our arterial bus rapid transit legislation, I noted earlier that we made a lot of progress last year in funding the F line. This is a line that goes from Blaine to Minneapolis. And we had funding available, there's funding available to us through the city of Minneapolis's TIF program, thanks to some legislation we did last year. And then there was also an allocation that we provided, but there's still one final piece that needs to be funded, and that is the topic of Representative Bernardi's bill. And so I will move that House File 2997, funding for the F line, be laid over for possible inclusion. And so Representative Bernardi, welcome, and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. It is a pleasure to be here in front of this committee today with the F Metro F line, as they call it. And I guess we would call this the fantastic line as for up here in the Northland. And I grew up in this community, and my two childhood homes were along this line within a half a block to a block of this line. And I remember my mom talking about this line when I was younger growing up in our community. And she said she was all excited that there was going to be, there was plans being made for a light rail line coming through right by our house. And so here we are, I have to say decades later, and I can say how many, but now we have this arterial BRT coming through our community, and we need to finish the funding for that project. So I wanted to share with you briefly that it starts in Blaine, Minnesota, and it goes all the way down through Spring Lake Park, Ridley, goes over to Columbia Heights, and then through Hilltop, and then goes to Minneapolis. It is, Route 10 is the top five ridership Metro Transit bus routes with more than 7,000 daily rides in 2019. Interesting facts about this line within the corridor, we have 65,000 people and are expecting 75,000 by 2040. People of color in this community are over 21,000, 19,000 low-income people, 31,000 renters. It will create access to 157,500 jobs, including really important jobs in the community. And 46% of the, well, I already talked about this, but 46% of Route 10 riders are people of color or live in low-income households. It's an exciting project. We've already secured over $40 million for it. Chair Hornstein talked about that. We've gotten it through federal grants and the 2021 state investment. And it's fun to know that this is coming close to fruition. We have finished up our rest of our funding. And in mid-2022, the community engagement to introduce the project and develop a corridor plan. And in 2025, construction is planned to begin and service starting in 2026, pending, obviously, full funding. So with that, I have with us today a member of our community, Scott Hickok, with the City of Fridley to talk about the importance of this line for our community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Hickok, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. I am very proud and pleased to be before you today to talk about this project. Thank you, Representative Bernardi, for all your hard work on this as well. We in Fridley have been working very, very hard on our University Avenue corridor, and we've always been proud of the fact that 10 has had such great ridership. The timing of this couldn't be better because along with the whole concept of the F line and the efficiencies that it will bring, we have also been working on pathway and walkway connections that make travel through our community much easier by something other than a vehicle. And we have really worked on the corridor itself in terms of the aesthetic and in terms of safety, and worked with MnDOT and their studies on lighting and how we could make intersections safer and how we could make the entire corridor just work better. So the timing of this is wonderful. And I think that the whole concept is just thrilling for us. We, on the corridor, did do an engagement process whereby we had four meetings and brought in citizens from all over Fridley, and our consultants on that were just amazed at how many citizens wanted to be involved and to say what they thought worked and what didn't work. And we learned a lot from that, everything from the aesthetics to the safety, and really importantly, the transportation route that it provides. And so many people spoke up about the transit opportunities that University Avenue provides in this F route is certainly going to be a very, very strong addition in terms of the efficiencies, again, that it provides. We have, within the last 5 years, added 1,008 housing units along the corridor, either immediately adjacent to the corridor or within a very short walking distance to the corridor. We believe that those folks will really benefit from this line and the importance that it will bring for their transit needs. We also have folks in the census districts that are closest to this line that either have no cars or one car. And so they've long been fans of 10 and certainly will be fans of F as we move forward. Again, I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for all the work and the funding that has gone into this so far. And we in Fridley are very, very supportive of F and all it will bring. Again, committee, thank you, and I'd be glad to stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hickok. Are there any questions? I don't see any, but we very much appreciate your testimony and your enthusiasm for the project. And Representative Bernardi, did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to leave us with on the F line?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to also recognize Representative Cagle. We've worked really hard on transportation in our community to make it safer for people to be able to use our roadways and our transportation system. And so I wanted to acknowledge that as well and look forward to the support in moving this project forward with our committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I want to echo your appreciation for Representative Cagle's work. She's been a very strong advocate of this as well. So we have a number of very strong legislators along this line, and we appreciate your work. So members, with that, Is there a question?
Couple hands up, Mr.
Chair. Oh, did not see those. I apologize. We'll take Representative Torkelson first and then Representative Hausman. Representative Torkelson.
Actually, it's going to be Representative Petersburg. We're sharing his computer, but okay. if I could.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to all three of these, this is just kind of a question about financing as well. I believe that the current statutes that are in place, the state is responsible for 50% of the cost of running these BRT lines after the fare box and other revenue sources that are there. Does anybody have an estimate on what that might be for each line? And do we have any kind of analysis on what the state may need to reserve into future legislatures?
A very good question, Representative Petersburg. We do have Mr. Thompson, I believe, on the line from the Met Council. I think that he would probably be in the best position to answer that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, Nick Thompson, Deputy General Manager, Metro Transit. Just an update, the ABRTs are funded by Metro Transit after fares. So there isn't a local share like there are on transitways. So that's one difference for these. And they all, each of our ABRT routes, including the ones you heard about today, are replacing existing transit routes that have operations. And so what we are finding is that we shift some of the existing funding from a route to an ABRT route that this replaces. We do run longer hours and more service, so their operating costs are higher than their current route, but we anticipate they will be funded out of the motor vehicle sales tax and other operating funding sources that we currently have within our budget.
Just if I could interject, though, and I think this may have been part of Representative Petersburg's question, there is federal funding, correct? You get CMAQ dollars, there's other federal pots that are part of this, both the construction and operations. Is that correct, Mr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair and members, and on the future lines, we are using the federal funding for capital investment. We have had in the past a mix of federal funds for capital and operating, but we're forecasting that the federal funds would all be for capital investment.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Petersburg, did you have a follow-up?
Just to make sure we clarify, I think what I heard you say is that the operations of this, the state is not under any obligation for the operations of it outside of the normal dollars that you get through MVEST. Is that in the long and short of it?
That is our current plan, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. And now we have Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask, I may have missed it, but I thought there was an earlier testifier and you had suggested she wait till all three of the bills were
presented.
Yeah, we'll
let them get, after this Q&A here, we're going to get to two testifiers actually that will wrap up the
Okay. I was thinking you were just about ready to hand it off, but
no. We have two testifiers. Thank you, Representative Hausman. If there's no other questions for Representative Bernardi, then I will.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Torkelson.
It's the real Torkelson this time.
Yeah.
So this may, I don't know if this is the right time to ask this or not, but we've had, you know, BRT in operation for a while now in some locations. Do we have any information as to the impact on traffic, if there's a difference between BRTs and regular bus lines? I know they do have some more sophisticated technology when it comes to traffic lights, et cetera. If this is not the right time, we can talk
about
it.
No, this is a completely appropriate, good time for that question. It's a good question, and I think I will defer to Mr. Thompson on that one.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, that's a great question. ABRT, when we do invest in ABRT, we do a few things that change traffic patterns. We add transit signal priority systems to the signal systems that speed up the speed of transit travel and has a, you know, it aids with traffic flow also. And then the buses, in some of the situations, the buses do stop to pick up passengers in a lane of traffic. We've done some analysis of that. That has had no negative impacts on overall traffic flow in the corridor. But we do know that transit travel times for an ABRT, our target is to be 20% or more faster than the transit line they are replacing. And we are achieving that from a transit travel time.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that, Mr. Thompson. How about impact on the rest of the traffic on those adjacent streets and on the street that the bus is running on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think we've done our most in-depth study on the A line, which was our first ABRT, and we'll be happy to follow up with that study. I think I recall that the impact was, there was no noticeable impact, but I will make sure to share that with the committee. It was a study, independent study, done, by, I believe, by the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Okay, now with that, members, I will lay over House File 2997 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you.
So, members, just to give you a little roadmap for the rest of our hearing, we're going to hear general testimony in support of arterial BRT from Ms. Sabatka and Mr. Schroer, and then we're going to transition to a longer and more in-depth conversation about electric buses. And we'll hope to get to that in about 10 minutes or so, or less. So with that, I do have on the list then for general testimony, Suzanne Sabatka. Ms. Sabatka, welcome back, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great, as in G-line. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Suzanne Sabatka, and I am the Policy and Research Director at MOVE Minnesota, a nonprofit organization that advocates for Minnesotans to use transit, biking, walking, and rolling as their preferred means of transportation when those modes work well, and advocating to improve those modes when they do not work well. I am very glad to be here to speak in favor of House File 2997, House File 3623, and House File 3767, which fund the F, G, and H lines respectively. I'd like to thank the bill authors, Representatives Bernardi, Hansen, and Jordan, and their co-authors for taking the initiative to fund these next three lines of the Metro Transit Network Next Plan, which envisions building out 15 total bus rapid transits to serve the metro area. As you've heard from the authors, the F, G, and H lines represent excellent opportunities to advance new routes in corridors that already have existing high ridership, and also can grow ridership within those corridors. The F line was partially funded in the Transportation Omnibus Finance Bill last year, and we are grateful for the planning efforts are already underway to better serve residents, businesses, and workers along the Central Avenue corridor in Minneapolis. The G line, which serves Rice and Robert Streets, presents an enormous opportunity for growth in corridors that are already seeing significant investments. In Dakota County, Robert Street is seeing a boom in housing construction, along with brand new bike and pedestrian pathways that just opened this past fall. In Ramsey County, new affordable housing is being constructed just south of downtown. And north of downtown, the county has already presented ambitious plans for redeveloping Rice Street. Developers for the Sears site, which most of you must be familiar with, will soon plan to build a mix of residential and commercial properties to sit at the intersection of what will be the G line and the green line. The H line, which will travel on the current number three route on Como and Maryland Avenues in Minneapolis and St. Paul, will dramatically improve travel time and reliability on a well-used corridor that serves downtown Minneapolis, the University of Minnesota, and the east side of St. Paul. All three of these lines have the potential to spark job creation and greatly improve mobility within these corridors by providing reliable and frequent service with conveniences like off-board fare pavement and traffic signal prioritization. I will take this chance to remind committee members as well that these lines also provide connections to local bus service, which truly is the heart and soul of our transit system. We'll look forward to continuing the conversation on making improvements and investments on both levels of bus service in the coming weeks and months. Thank you for your time, and I can remain available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sabatka. And yeah, we'll hold any questions for you until Mr. Schroer completes his testimony. And if there are any questions, people can direct them to either Ms. Sabatka or Mr. Schroer. Mr. Schroer, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Will Schroer. I am the executive director of East Metro Strong. We're a public-private partnership between cities, counties, and employers in the East Metro, but we like to see transit improvements and transportation improvements across the whole region and the whole state. Our members include Washington and Ramsey counties, St. Paul, and a little shout out to West St. Paul. And so the folks that would be served by these investments are both on and off or in and not in the areas that would be immediately served by these investments. So West St. Paul, obviously strongly in favor of the G line. Equally in favor of investing in the G line, though, is Washington County, which is not being served by the G line, but is served by other parts of the system. And all of our members see the value of increasing the size of the network to connect residents and businesses and destinations. You've heard from me before, last go around, as Chair Hornstein rightly notes, a lot of progress in funding other routes. Ecolab, big supporter of the B-line because it helps connect their employees to their residences. And this last round, in addition to all the other benefits of BRT that you've heard, I want to give a thanks to Metro Transit for running an excellent public participation process. And I'm just going to note that this public participation process took place during COVID and address some of the concerns that maybe people wouldn't be using transit as much post-COVID. We heard an apartment owner in Fridley note that he was strongly in favor of investing in BRT to Fridley because why his residents needed that service to get to work, to shopping, and to destinations. So we have the business community, the employers, apartment property owners strongly in favor. And as you heard from other folks, you have the users themselves strongly in favor of these investments. I would just conclude my remarks by underlining one of the previous remarks that these investments for the long run will help our communities be resilient communities and resilient in the face of a number of potential challenges that we're seeing right now and are not necessarily going to go away. One of those is high fuel prices and the ability to have a choice, to have an option in how one gets around. We've heard about people that depend on transit. We've heard a lot of the essential users and their necessity of using transit. We need to offer not only the essential employees this opportunity, but also the folks that do have a choice and need to look for a way to save money on gas. And we see those folks using the kind of convenient, timely transportation that ABRT provides to make that choice to save money in their household budget as well. So I just want to thank the committee for having a variety of perspectives presented today, underline all of the other good reasons, and but wanted to bring that business community perspective and underline that as well. So I thank all the bill sponsors and Chair Hornstein for bringing these forward, and the whole committee for your previous support of these investments, and hope for and ask for your support for them going forward as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schroer. Thank you for your help and your advocacy. You do a very good job, and it's appreciated. I don't see any questions for Mr. Schroer or Ms. Sabatka, so I wanted to thank both of you for your broader brush perspective on these lines, and we will look forward to keeping in touch with you as the session progresses. So thank you for that. Members, I want to now transition to a conversation about bus electrification. We started this last week when Metro, the Met Council, presented their budget. There is a budget item, I believe, for $3.2 million to take the next steps in what's called the zero emission transit, zero emission vehicle transition plan, bus transition plan for the Met Council. This was part of our bill last year. You may recall that in the omnibus bill in 2021, there was a provision asking the Metropolitan Council to do a plan, which they have concluded, to transition their fleet over time to zero emission transit vehicles. So we're going to start with the Met Council. And then there's also, this is not just a metropolitan transit phenomenon. There's been some incredible progress and work done in Duluth. So we'll hear from the Duluth Transit Authority. And then once Metro Transit and the DTA have done their presentations, then we'll take questions from the committee. So first up is the Met Council. And again, we mentioned that we would have a more in-depth discussion. We just touched on this last week. So we will have more details. And our first testifier is, I believe, Mr. Shetnan from Government Affairs at the Met Council. Or is it Mr. Thompson? Either one. I've both of your names down. I don't know what order you wanted to go in.
Mr. Chair, Nick Thompson, I can start off today.
Okay, welcome back, Mr. Thompson. And I see you have a PowerPoint, so proceed.
Yep. You're seeing it? Okay, great. So thank you for this opportunity to just do a brief highlight of our zero emission bus transition plan. The full plan is attached to the agenda today, and welcome people to review that in detail. With me today is also Brian Funk, our Chief Operating Officer at Metro Transit, so he can help me answer some of the questions, as this was a plan that was developed both from capital and operations side, along with our stakeholders. So as the chair mentioned, this plan, which we submitted to the legislature a few weeks ago, came out of last session, and actually it was really, really well defined about what this plan should be in terms of the plan development and the content of it. And we really, you know, this is really good timing too, because as I'll touch on later, a lot of the new federal funding from the bipartisan infrastructure bill requires that agencies requesting federal funding have a zero emission bus plan as part of their request. And so we, with the completion of this and the foresight of the legislature, we really are in a great position to use this plan as a basis for seeking federal funding for our capital plan. We've went through a long process from last summer through this February that involved extensive amount of outreach and communication, several workshops of both internal and external elements that of people of interest in this development of the zero emission bus plan. It really took some great feedback, I think, especially this is an area of extreme interest by a lot of our community, and so they really helped shape this plan. So starting with, you know, the overall, what our plan concluded is our targets for transition to a zero emission fleet. We looked at a lot of peer agencies on how they set targets. It's very common for bus plans to set targets, often a target that is for 2040 or 2050. We took a little bit different tack here and said, let's set a near-term target that is both aggressive and one that can be achievable. And then to develop what our performance indicators would be for the time period after that. And so our target for the next 5 years is to that at least 20% of our fleets, of our 40-foot bus fleet, which is the main part of our bus fleet, be a zero emission bus, be electric actually buses of those that we procure over the next 5 years. And within that time frame, we'll be establishing several performance indicators. We'll be evaluating the electric bus fleet that is in our operation that we have today and that we will be procuring to really set the next target after that and really look forward to eventual transition of our entire fleet. So that was a really important overall goal of the plan that we established. The next few slides, I'll talk about how we got to that establishment of that goal and what the inputs were. Performance measures itself, it's often we've come to you and we've had a lot of questions around cost, but what's most important is around providing transit service to our customers. So we have several measures on this that are around reliability of transit. Our goal is to really make it not an electric bus or a diesel bus decision, is just make sure that people have a bus that arrives on time, and on schedule, and gets them to where they're going. So we have measures around the reliability, the availability of the fleet that are very important to how we evaluate whether electric buses will work within our overall fleet complement. electric bus has its own infrastructure, so we need to have some understanding about charging infrastructure and how reliable that is. Cost is for certain a big part of it, not just capital cost, but we want to understand what our energy cost per mile driven is on electric on all of our bus types, so that we can compare this technology to more traditional technology. And lastly, part of the reason we're doing this is for environmental impacts. We want to measure, we know it has less emissions reduction, but we really want to have a good measurement of about that benefit and the equity environmental justice indicators of where these buses are operating and who they're impacting and who are they serving. So those are some of the measures that we're defining within our plan. The principles that our stakeholders and our operations and our capital groups have all came up with kind of break down into three buckets: technical viability, equity, environmental justice, and fiscal impact. As I mentioned, technical viability, our goal is this, our make our zero emission buses just part of our fleet. We refer to them as buses rather than in a diesel bus or an electric buses. It's a decision about where to deploy buses to provide that services. Electric, of course, has its own unique aspect of how we get the energy for these buses. So Xcel has been a tremendous partner both in the development of this plan, but helping us as an agency and as a region think through how do we transition a fleet from a standpoint of charging the fleet and the facilities where these fleets go. Xcel has been just a critical partner and supporter of this plan and really helped us in areas of, you know, where they're the experts on delivering electrical service and matching it up with what we can do. In terms of equity and environmental justice, who are we, who is benefiting from the lower emissions, but also, you know, where do the, what communities are interested in this technology, where do we impact reliability of service? And so we had a lot of good input in that. And then fiscally, as you all know, we've talked about it this committee, at this point, capital cost of an electric bus is higher than existing diesel or hybrid buses. So really, what is a fiscally efficient manner to deploy these in a way within the resources that we have and maximizing federal resources and also, you know, minimizing the financial implications on our operating budget. So getting to these goals that we set, we had to go through a methodological stepwise progression and really thinking about not just the fleet, it's a broader discussion about what the infrastructure is to provide a zero emission service. So thinking about the garages that we own, which is where we have determined, and at least in the short term, where most these buses will be charged at the garage level. So understanding, working with Xcel, of where can they provide the power necessary to charge a large fleet? You know, our bus garages can have well over 200 buses within a single garage. So that's a tremendous energy need to serve that if the whole garage was electric. So thinking through where the power sources are, what makes sense, how to prioritize our garages, and in what order we convert garage by garage over to electrification of a fleet. Obviously, one of the key questions with electric fleet is what is the battery of the bus and how far can they travel? This is the area of technology that is evolving very rapidly. And just the performance of a bus today is so much different than even a couple years ago, trending in such a great direction. But in our state, we have to consider both the life and the ability to charge and how far a bus can run, but also how can it operate in the coldest day. We want that bus service to work just as good on a 20 below day as a 70 degree day, and we don't want the battery life to impact that whether we can provide that service to customers. We went through a very detailed analysis of all our routes and to see where people live, impact on equity of the populations that the different routes serve, and then both things from the length of the route relative to charging, but lots of decisions about which routes and which garages serve which routes would make sense for this beginning of this transition. And lastly, the best way to fiscally prioritize the investment in a way that's efficient from a capital and operating standpoint.
Mr. Thompson, if you could wrap up soon, we want to get to our friends from Duluth as well.
Sure. Just two more slides. Our plan goes through all the barriers and risks that resulted in our goal that you can see here in terms of electricity, but also the technology and our manufacturers and what their capacity is. And then we set our objectives and strategies for how fast we could deliver this based on the objectives that our stakeholders and our operations determined. And that's where we really rolled out this near-term plan and our performance targets. And lastly, our funding opportunities were before this committee last week about the $3.2 million governor's request for funding electric buses. This past Monday, there was a federal procurement notice for the next round of low emission investment that Metro Transit will be pursuing this spring, grant opportunities for our fleet and our facilities. And we are right now on implementing 8 electric buses that we just received a federal grant for last year, that it's in the procurement process. And we're waiting to hear on another procurement that we should hear about in the next few months that we submitted last year. So a lot of activity in procurement of electric buses occurring. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you so much, Mr. Thompson, for that very thorough report and update, and we'll get to questions for Mr. Thompson in just a few minutes. We do first want to hear from a perspective from outside of the metro area. There's some really good work being done in Duluth. So we have from the Duluth Transit Authority, Nancy Brown. Ms. Brown, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. I'm Nancy Brown. Thank you, members of the committee, for listening to us today. I'd also like to acknowledge our general manager, Rod Fournier, and our marketing director, Dave Clark. I'm going to share my screen with you. The Duluth Transit Authority was the first transit authority in the state to acquire battery electric buses. We signed up for this because we know that, you know, we have a saying here, if it can work in Duluth, it can work anywhere. So we wanted to make sure that we were in on the front end and making sure that we could help the manufacturers build a bus that can work anywhere. 10% of our fleet is now battery electric. We've partnered with some independent agencies to measure the performance of the buses. And actually, NREL, if you're familiar with them, will be coming out with a report later this year on our experience and comparing it with some of the other transit agencies that have also adopted this technology. Our buses are not as big as Metro Transit, but they certainly serve our needs. We do believe in good environmental stewardship. And we have solar panels on our downtown building, on our downtown transit center. We have transitioned to LED lights. We've taken on a lot of effort to make sure that we're fulfilling that value. We do spend a lot of time talking to all of the bus manufacturers, sharing our experience, explaining to them why things went well or why they didn't go well. All of our buses are charged in our bus storage area. We do not have fast chargers, but these buses have been instrumental in helping other, not only the manufacturers, but other transit agencies understand the use profile that they need to consider before they acquire an electric bus. We talked to a lot of transit agencies. We've shared our information with Rochester and Mankato and St. Cloud and Moorhead. You know, we talk to a lot of transit agencies around the state. And I always tell them, if you're going to wait for the technology to be perfect, you'll never own a transit bus. You need to be able to, you know, step back and look at your system, understand how you're going to use the electric bus, and make the right decision for your agency. You know, how many of you didn't buy a cell phone because you were waiting for that cell phone to be perfect, or because you didn't understand how it works? We believe that putting these electric buses out there, the public can see these vehicles, and they figure if it works in a transit bus, it must work in a car very well. we're always open to visitors, and we are willing to share whatever information that we have learned through the course of this experiment. As Mr. Thompson just noted, the FTA just came out with an announcement of a $1.6 billion grant program for low and no emission vehicles. We are watching very carefully how they're allocating these funds. And for the DTA, the one overriding feature that we've learned is that there is reduced range on these buses in the cold weather. And we need to make sure that before we move forward with any transition plan, any further transition plan, that we acquire the buses that best meet our system's needs. We also, as I heard before, you know, resiliency is really important. And there are things that we've never had to consider before. An extended power outage. Are you going to put alternative charging areas outside of the trunk line that you're on? There's a lot of things that come with this. It can be daunting, but there's lots of resources out there to help people. You are also familiar with the cost differential for these electric buses. The thing that we have to also remember is that we believe that these electric buses may last longer than a diesel bus. You know, they have about 35 to 40% fewer moving parts, so there's less wear and tear on some items. And, you know, we do have to replace the batteries periodically. Here at the DTA, we haven't established when that's going to happen yet, but it's a significant cost. But if you think about it, you know, you replace the batteries in your flashlight and your flashlight continues on. The batteries in the bus are the same way. If you've replaced those batteries in the bus, it's going to continue working for a fairly long time. This is a picture of the DTA infrastructure. And the thing that I always try to remind people when we talk to them is build for the future. Even though we only have 7 buses, our infrastructure can handle up to 20. This was dedicated actually to our electric buses. It doesn't serve any other electric systems in the DTA building. The other thing is that, you know, again, that resiliency. How are you going to take care of these buses if you have a major power outage? We do have a backup generator. We're looking at future use for those batteries when we take them out of the bus. We take them out of the bus when they reach 80% remaining charge. You don't throw away your flashlight batteries if they still have 80% of their capacity. We're going to find a use for those batteries when it comes time to replace them. Like Xcel Energy, Minnesota Power has been a phenomenal partner for us. I can't speak highly enough of them. They have a pilot project for us to limit our demand charges because our buses go out in the morning. We top them off in the middle of the day, and then they go out in the afternoon. They can go out for a fairly long period of time when it's 50 or 60 degrees outside. But when it's 10 below, they're more limited. The thing that I always try to point out is that, you know, as road tax revenue decreases, there's going to be, you know, it's tempting to want to charge charging, put a road tax on charging. As a public agency, we hope that we'll be given the same consideration that we were for forgiveness on road tax. Because a tax on a tax that the taxpayers are paying us, it becomes an additional burden for us to be able to transition to alternative fuels. Oops. For the past 3 months, our buses cost about $10,000 to charge them. At $3 a gallon, just over $3 a gallon, it's not much of a savings. The thing that I really like about this is that our charging infrastructure and the cost for them don't fluctuate like you see fuel costs do. That's very helpful for us in our budgeting. You know, all transit agencies have tight budgets. And when we don't have to sit and try to guess what fuel prices are going to be next week, it makes life a whole lot easier for us. Of course, the environmental impacts are significant. That number on the left, the diesel gallons avoided, over 55,000 gallons of diesel fuel have been avoided since we've implemented these buses. That was as of the end of January. I don't have February numbers yet to share with you. But the greenhouse gases that were avoided are significant, and they do have a value. Although we were honest and said we do have diesel heaters on these buses, and so we took out and acknowledged that 47,000.
What about the emissions. Electricity that's generated by fossil fuels.
Yes, and that is included in here.
I think you answered a possible question. Ms. Brown, how many more slides? Because we do need to move on to member questions.
Yes, the DTA is upgrading our system as well. We're planning to implement some BRT routes. The one thing that we haven't heard about is hopefully for this committee is to understand that the workforce also needs to keep up. We need training programs for our technicians and making sure that resiliency in our systems for disaster response is also funded. With that, thank you so much, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Ms. Brown. So members, we have a few minutes for questions. I see Representative Elkins and Representative Mason, and we probably have time for one more after those two. So Representative Mason, I think you had your hand up first. We could be brief on the question and the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is for Mr. Thompson. When you were saying something about garage suitability, is it mainly just having to do with the providing the electricity, et cetera, or is it changing the sizes of the buses as well? What all comes under that suitability?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, it's both garage suitability in terms of where Xcel's power sources are, but also about who owns the garage. We have some that are leased and some that are owned, and then the configuration of the garage. But the number one driver is really the partnership with the utility and what level of power they can get to the garage and in what time frame is the one of the key drivers.
Thank you.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, a question for Ms. Brown. Does your electric utility give you a discount on the electricity you purchase for overnight charging when there's just low base load?
Ms. Brown.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Representative Elkins, they do give us the super off-peak rate overnight. They also did limit our demand charges during the day, so that it would be a competitive cost for us. They have been super helpful.
Okay, thank you.
And either Representative Torkelson or Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Torkelson here. I hope I'm not too deep in the weeds. I'm curious if these electric buses have a higher vehicle weight than our other types of buses, and whether or not that is a problem with road maintenance, damage to the roads. I've observed that bus stops tend to get pretty beat up after continuous bus stopping. It's that energy has to be absorbed by the road. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And would either Mr. Thompson or Ms. Brown, if you want to handle that question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Tucker says they have a different weight. And we, even with our diesel buses, though, we have to often put concrete pads at our bus stops because of the weight of any bus is one that we have to factor into that. The actual weight difference, I'd have to get back to you on the difference between a traditional diesel bus and a similar bus that we're replacing.
And thank you. It's not too in the weeds, Representative Torkelson. This is exactly why we have these hearings, to surface these types of questions. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Torkelson?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, are there any other questions from our panel about electric vehicle transition in both the metro area and Duluth? I will scan the committee one more time. I do not see any further questions. So thank you very much. I really appreciate both your testimony, Mr. Thompson and Ms. Brown. And Ms. Brown, yes, would love to visit you up in Duluth. We had a field hearing there before COVID, and I don't know if we can get up there again here this year, but I really do. You do a wonderful job and appreciate your work a lot. And as you said, if it can work in Duluth, it probably can work almost anywhere. So thanks again to both of you. Members, what we're going to do now is we have some public testimony on the topic of bus electrification. And so I will call on several folks to provide brief testimony. Our first is Matt Lelou from the Communication Workers of America Local 7304. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Matt Lelou. I want to thank Rep. John Howe and all the other representatives for allowing me to speak today. I work at New Flyer in St. Cloud, Minnesota. New Flyer is North America's largest transit bus manufacturer, providing mobility solutions for public agencies across North America. New Flyer coaches proudly serve North America's largest transit agencies and over 400 others across Canada and the U.S. With zero emission buses and coaches, infrastructure, and technology, New Flyer meets today's urban demands for scalable, smart mobility solutions. Besides being a welder, I'm also president of our union, CWA Local 7304. I represent 500 employees in St. Cloud and 200 in Crookston, Minnesota currently. By the end of this year, New Flyer is planning to return to pre-COVID bus build rates of 20 boxes per week at both of our Minnesota plants. With those increased line speeds, we are looking to hire. Current estimates put us at nearly 1,000 good-paying union jobs in Minnesota. Electric buses are our future. The transition away from diesel to zero emission is happening quickly. My coworkers and I at New Flyer are in a unique position to help our state with electric bus needs. We hope to build all the zero emission buses for our state. None of my coworkers like seeing our competitors' coaches in the Twin Cities, and we don't like knowing that our tax money is going to California or other areas instead of staying in our state. By purchasing Metro Transit coaches from New Flyer, we could be supporting local economies in our state and helping to create good-paying union jobs with benefits in Minnesota. We think it's a win-win for our state. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lelou. And members, again, if you have questions for any of our testifiers, we'll take those at the end. Our next testifier is Kathleen Schuler. She's the Policy Director of Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Schuler, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kathleen Schuler. I'm Policy Director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. We're a network of over 500 doctors, nurses, and other health professionals. And we support a transition to electric school buses to protect the health of children. Diesel engine exhaust causes lung cancer in humans. And diesel exhaust particles are also associated with severe allergic asthma attacks. And two other components of diesel exhausts, nitric oxides and fine particulate matter, also trigger asthma attacks, and long-term exposure increases the risk of heart attacks, high blood pressure, and stroke. Diesel exhaust concentrates inside the bus, increasing children's exposure. One study found that children inside a bus could be exposed to exhaust in amounts that significantly increase their risk of cancer. Bus operators are also exposed to diesel exhaust, and idling school buses at pickup zones increase the concentration of diesel exhaust, exposing school staff, parents picking up their kids, and kids who use other forms of transportation. The risk of exposure to pollution is compounded in neighborhoods that already have poor outdoor air quality, which are largely communities of color. Switching to cleaner buses improves children's health, especially those who have asthma. A study in Georgia found that cleaner buses helped improve the aerobic capacity in children and increase their cognitive function with higher English language and math scores. And finally, buses that burn fossil fuels accelerate climate change. We must reach zero carbon emissions by 2050 to avoid the worst effects of climate change on human health. Transitioning to electric school buses helps us meet our climate goals and will have a positive impact on children's health. We have more detailed information in our handout, and I thank you for the opportunity to share this information today.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schuler. Thank you for your work. And I think it's a really important reminder that there are really important health benefits to curbing traditional emissions. And members, you may recall that Chairman Fu Li has brought a bill to us around the particular impacts that Ms. Schuler was talking about to communities of color and other low-income communities. So I think that it's really, your testimony is really important and I appreciate it. Thank you. Our next testifier is Hugh Lee from the Sierra Club. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Hugh Lay, and I'm a senior campaign representative with the Sierra Club. I'm here today to talk about how the recent federal government initiatives will help unlock this transition towards electric buses for Minnesota. The recent bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed in November of 2021 provides over $20 billion in funding for states like Minnesota to transition away from fossil fuel powered buses and towards electric one. These historic investments will allow states to purchase electric transit and electric school buses, as well as upgrade and installing charging infrastructure to support the deployment of these buses. The Department of Transportation is providing $7.5 billion for purchasing electric transit buses, with $5.6 billion set aside specifically for acquiring low and zero emission buses through the Low or No Emission Bus Grants Program. A separate $2 billion grant process is available to replace, rehabilitate, and purchase buses and related equipment. Additionally, the Environmental Protection Agency is providing $2.5 billion between 2022 and 2026 for replacing school buses with electric ones. And lastly, to also provide the last funding stream, the Federal Highway Administration, in conjunction with the Department of Transportation, is providing a cumulative $5 billion for states to upgrade and install new charging stations in order to help fulfill President Biden's commitment of installing 500,000 charging stations across the country. Minnesota does not need to apply for any of this funding from this from the Federal Highway Administration pool. Your state will be given nearly $7 million through formula funding to spend evenly across 5 years from 2022 to 2026. Between now and August 1st, your state DOT just needs to submit a plan regarding how they wish to spend these dollars. Additionally, as part of this program as well, there's an additional $2.5 billion being provided for states through a charging and fueling discretionary grant program that you all can apply to upgrade and install charging stations. Needless to say, I say all these things because it's highly critical that Minnesota leverage its voice and that you all encourage your potential transit agencies and school districts and anyone operating a bus fleet to apply for these federal grants, which can fund up to the total cost of an electric bus and including the upgrade and installation to support it. As legislators of this committee, you can all help unlock these federal grant dollars for your communities by working with your transit agencies and your school districts, by encouraging them to apply, and you can help secure them funding by assisting with their grant proposals by writing letters of support to accompany these proposals to these federal agencies. These federal opportunities represent a huge moment for Minnesota to transition towards an all-electric bus fleet, and I implore you all to take advantage of it for the health and longevity of our communities. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mr. Lay, and again, appreciate the reminder of how important and historic this federal infrastructure bill is, the bipartisan federal bill, otherwise known as the Investment, Infrastructure, and Jobs Act. So our next testifier is Anjali Baines from Fresh Energy. She is the lead director of energy access and equity for the organization. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Anjali Baines, and I lead the Energy Access and Equity team at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization working to accelerate Minnesota's transition to a clean energy economy, while also ensuring that such a transition is both just and equitable. Electrifying our buses plays a major role in doing just that by providing an opportunity for those who can't or don't want to drive a personal vehicle to still access and enjoy clean, zero-emissions transportation. Eliminating tailpipe emissions from buses is also an important first step to reducing the traffic pollution from major roadways that unfairly and disproportionately harm under-resourced communities and those of color. Electric buses also mean a healthier work environment for bus operators, who can breathe easier knowing that the vehicle they're driving day in and day out is not exposing them to health-harming fumes. Finally, as Nick Thompson mentioned from Metro Transit, electric buses, both transit and school, have come a long way since they were first introduced to the market years ago. Here in Minnesota, we've been especially lucky to have transit agencies like Metro Transit and Duluth Transit lead the way in figuring out how to make electric buses work in our state. Based in part on those pilots and many others, the latest models of electric buses are built for cold temperatures and elevation changes. This improvement is all the more apparent when we see other cold weather places like Canada and Finland double down on their electric bus investments and purchases. Minnesota could and should be part of that progress. We thank the committee for making the time to discuss this important clean energy solution. With federal funding now open, as we've heard, we have a real opportunity to support electric buses now and make sure that more are deployed in Minnesota sooner in a way that benefits everyone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Baines. Our next testifier is Nick Martini, coordinator of transportation for the Osseo Area Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. I'm glad to be here today to share our experience. I'm Nick Martini. I'm coordinator of transportation for Osseo Area Schools here in the Northwest Metro. We serve all or parts of Osseo, Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Maple Grove, Dayton, and Plymouth. In conjunction with one of our transportation vendors, North Star Bus Lines, we were the recipients of pilot grant funds through the MPCA's administration of the VW settlement for the purchase of three electric school buses. Our buses have been on the road since October, and while we're new to the electric buses, our experience so far has been overwhelmingly positive. Our business, as you all know, is protecting the most valuable cargo imaginable. With these buses, our drivers relay back to us that the lack of engine noise makes them feel more focused and aware. They've also reported that the weight distribution throughout the bus and lower center of gravity with the batteries in the bottom have provided strong performance in the winter weather. And additionally, we've experienced some minor reductions in the range on the coldest days, losing about 15 miles of our 125-mile range on some of our coldest mornings. It's not overall impacted our operations any more than concerns that we've had with our diesel or propane vehicles in our fleets as well. That really put to rest one of our biggest safety concerns that we have is leaving these buses stranded in Minnesota's cold weather. Our mechanics report the maintenance on the buses has been less work with less downtime. The lack of traditional engine components is providing more time on route and lowering routine maintenance costs as there's just simply fewer moving components. Additionally, the buses are not leaking oil or fuel that can make it into our waterways. Addressing charging concerns, well, we've heard about people wondering about some of that stuff. And so the stop and go nature of our school transportation business really provides the opportunity to capitalize on the ability of power regeneration through braking systems. Additionally, off-peak charging fits well with school bus use as we're not operational during most off-peak hours. And investments in solar power have also reduced our reliance on fossil fuels to charge these buses. The buses so far have been very beneficial for our students. The new venture has brought excitement to riding the bus. It's provided educational opportunities for our students. It's created collaborative partnerships that will serve our district stakeholders well beyond transportation also. Students on these buses no longer are inhaling diesel exhaust, nor is exhaust from these vehicles entering air handling equipment at our sites. We're also not polluting the neighborhoods served by these vehicles, many of which are identified as areas of increased concern for environmental justice. I appreciate you having me here to share our experience today. I encourage you to support electrification of the bus industry to benefit the overall health of our students, their families, and their communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Martini, for that excellent testimony. Again, you'll be sticking around along with others if there are member questions. So our last testifier from the public this afternoon is Steve Jorison from MN350. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and the committee. My name is Steve Jorison. I'm a volunteer with the MN350 Clean Transportation Team. The MN350 team has been working for about 3 years to accelerate the transition to electric school buses in Minnesota. When our team first met to decide which part of the transportation emissions to prioritize, whether it's public transit or electric vehicles, et cetera, it was clear that electric school buses must be our top priority. I'll explain why in a minute. We worked with the MPCA to allocate VW settlement money for electric school buses, resulting in the purchases of 8 new buses throughout the state, including those in Mr. Martini's garage. We met with the Lakeville School District, where they've been running an electric school bus for 4 years with very good results. We met with Lion Electric, the maker of the electric buses. They're centered in Montreal, but they are building a new manufacturing facility in Illinois that will employ 750 workers to meet this growing need. We are not seeing our state's elected leaders doing enough to support this transition, in our opinion. Minnesota is going to transition to electric school buses. The only question is how soon our state and our school kids will see the benefits they provide. Benefits such as better student health, as Dr. Schuler explained, and improved air quality in high-density BIPOC neighborhoods, good-paying jobs, and helping Minnesota meet our carbon emission reduction targets. Every morning and afternoon, when our kids are getting on a diesel bus, they're exposed to diesel fumes with known carcinogens and particulate matter that affects their lungs. They can also clearly see we are not doing enough to secure a livable climate for their future. As Mr. Lee explained, the federal infrastructure bill sets aside $2.5 billion for electric school buses, but our schools are going to need a lot of help getting that money. Our state leadership needs a plan to help schools apply for this money. The time is now to invest in our kids' health and put them on a school bus that gives them hope for their future. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jorison. And now, members, we have just a little bit here. If you have questions of anyone on our citizens panel here, I see already Representative Nelson with your hand up. Representative Nelson.
Turn my camera on here. Yeah, I guess I had a question, and it's similar to what Representative Torkelson asked. Maybe Mr. Martini could answer from the Osceola School District. What are the difference in weight between a regular school bus and a electric one, if there's much difference in weight? I think with Representative Torkelson and some of our outstate people that drive on township roads that are gravel roads, that if they're a lot heavier in the spring, that what might be problematic for the condition of the roads. So Mr. Martini would have the answer to that question.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Mr. Martini.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Nelson, the information in the buses specifically that we've purchased as our electric buses, they have a vehicle weight of about 33,000 pounds. A traditional bus is right about that 26 to 28,000 pound. So they are a little bit heavier, but part of that is, as we say in the electric bus, it's up to 33,000 pounds because it depends on battery configuration. Our specific vehicles right now are a little bit less than that because we're only running three of the four possible battery packs. If we ran all four, it would be 33,000 pounds. So the three buses in Osseo are very similar in weight to what a diesel or propane vehicle would be.
Thank you. Have a follow up, Representative Nelson?
Nope. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question.
Okay. All right. I'm looking around our virtual room here and seeing if any members have any other questions or comments. I don't see any. So I want to thank the citizens for testifying, very helpful. And members, with that, I'll just give you a preview of our next hearing and just make a couple of closing comments here. I just wanted to thank everybody for coming today, your insightful testimony. I think this is really, really exciting and very critically important for our transportation system to move quickly with electrifying both school buses and transit vehicles. We'll be looking very closely at the bipartisan infrastructure bill and making sure that we can maximize the opportunities that the federal government has afforded to us here in Minnesota. So members, just to give you a quick preview of Thursday, we'll be hearing a couple of bills, including a large one from Representative Torkelson on the freight rail assistance program called MRCY that we have here in the state. And we will also be hearing an update from MnDOT around trunk highway bonding capacity. Now, this is gonna be a really important issue moving forward. We have a number of trunk highway bond proposals that have been introduced. So we wanna get up to speed on that process. And there's a couple of additional items in the governor's transportation budget that MnDOT will go over with us on Thursday. So with that, members, thank you very much. We are adjourned. Have a good rest of the day, and we'll see you on Thursday.